welcome to this edition of our cybersecurity podcast. I'm Richard Warner. Identity theft remains one of the most damaging crimes that people face online, and the risks are growing. To help us understand the threats and how to protect ourselves, we're joined by Eva Velasquez, CEO of the Identity Theft Resource Center. Eva has spent more than two decades in the fight against identity crime, from her years at the San Diego District Attorney's Office to leading the San Diego Better Business Bureau, and now heading the ITRC. She's been recognized nationally with awards from the U.S. Department of Justice and the National Consumer League, and she's appeared on CBS Mornings, NBC Nightly News, Fortune, NPR, and many others. She is a widely respected voice on cybercrime and fraud, and here she shares her insights on what identity theft really looks like in 2025, how criminals are getting more sophisticated, and what each of us can do to stay safe. What have you learned that you wish everybody knew?
Well, let me back up a little bit, because while I have been at the ITRC for almost 14 years, I started my career in law enforcement in 1986. So I've been working on the fraud issue for decades. But I will say that the scope and the scale of identity crimes, so that's identity theft, identity misuse, scams, fraud, cybercrime, I'm amazed that it can continue to grow and grow at the scale that it's growing. It just is, it's unbelievable to me. And so I guess to answer the question, I wish that people knew just how vulnerable they are to these issues. I think a lot of times people think that's not going to happen to me. And it's a way to protect yourself. I understand that. It's kind of scary out there in cyberspace, and it's scary to think about our data and our identities and how often they're used and can be misused. But the first step in any problem is knowing that there is one. So I always encourage people to realize that everyone is vulnerable, just differently.
I did a TV show for many years, had a co-anchor who had who got swiped. Her identity was stolen. She had a name that could be male or female. It was a male who stole it 800 miles away, leased an apartment, got kicked out for non-payment, leased another apartment, got kicked out. A judge, I guess it was a judge, froze her, all of her money. And she had to live off her parents while she fought this. She flew up there to New York, and the judge blessed her out and didn't believe her and found her guilty. I mean, depression became an issue, helplessness.
Oh, yes.
So what, people who don't really know what identity theft is, what is it?
Well, let's think of it this way. Anything that you do with your identity on a daily basis, when you prove that you are you, a thief with the right information can do the same thing. So it can be anything from opening a bank account, credit card, getting loans, getting medical care, including prescriptions, providing your information to law enforcement during the commission of a crime. To your point, renting an apartment, getting a job. And those things are actually happening. We talk to victims every day who are stunned that they... they're trying to get a job. They don't pass the background check because they find out someone is serving a prison sentence in another state in their name, or that they have warrants out for their arrest in a state that they've never even been to, that they can't get a prescription because a thief has been using their information to get narcotics prescriptions. Anything that you can do with your own identity, a thief can do it if they have enough of the pieces to pretend to successfully pretend to be you.
Let's talk about how people first learn that there might be something amiss. Is there something that you generally see that raises the, you know, the bar of trouble?
Generally speaking, people are trying to move forward in their life and they hit a roadblock. And now that's very broad, but that is really the only trend that we see. I wish that it was because people were calling us and saying, I was reviewing my credit report like I do, you know, every 3 months. And I noticed that there was this brand new account on there that I wasn't aware had been opened. But that's really not what happens. Most of the time, they're trying to refinance a house or purchase a home, and they find out that there's something wrong with their credit. They want to apply for student loans, and they find out they were a victim of child ID theft. Again, trying to get a job, can't pass the background check. It's any time they're trying to move forward and accomplish something in their life, and then an identity crime puts a roadblock in front of them. That's when they discover it.
So you've been doing this a long time. I was going to say the one thing we should be doing to prevent this, there may be more than one, but is freezing your credit a number one?
Freezing your credit is by far one of the most effective things that you can do. It covers the most ground, and it's one of those things that's relatively easy. I tend to shy away when people are like, what's the one thing that I can do? Because it is so much more than that. It's about creating a practice. It's like hygiene. Think about it. If you went into a doctor's office and said, I want to be healthy, doc, what do I have to do? Your doctor's not going to go, you know what, just brush your teeth. He's going to give you a list of things that probably are things like brush your teeth, keep your skin clean, get enough sleep, eat healthy, exercise, little habits that you practice every day that add up to something bigger. And that's really the same way that you should think about identity hygiene. It doesn't have to be perfect.
Okay, well, be the doctor.
Everything right.
What's the list then, Dr. Eva? What do we do?
The first thing I would tell people to do is admit that this is something that you need to be paying attention to. The second thing, freeze your credit. The third thing is upgrade your password game, particularly if you're a heavy digital user and you engage in a lot of digital transactions. Have unique passwords across all of your accounts. Enable MFA, not just where it's mandatory, multi-factor authentication, but even if it's an option, avail yourself of that option. Better yet, if passkeys are an option, please use that option instead. And then, ask for help. You don't need to engage with every piece of incoming communication. You don't need to be curious and click on links for everything, especially if you're not expecting it. If you didn't initiate the contact, go to the source. Just go to the source and verify. It doesn't matter if it's a text message, a phone call, an email, a message, a social media direct message. If you didn't initiate that contact, take it off that platform and go to the source and verify.
So if you get an email from your bank that says something's amiss, go to the bank, don't respond to the email.
Absolutely. And you can engage with your bank any way that you normally do. Maybe you have the app, log into the app and you go to the customer service center and see if they're trying to get in touch with you. Call the number on the back of your card. If you go into the branch and that's how you like to bank, go into the branch and ask them. I also encourage people to call us, call the ITRC. We talk with people. It's particularly been around a lot of text messages lately, but if it's a known scam, we'll tell you and you don't have to waste any more of your time. Now, if it's not a known scam and we can't make that determination, we can walk you through the process of how you can verify if that communication is legitimate or not.
I was at a impressive conference in Washington last week. And the question was, what's going to happen with AI, artificial intelligence? And the answer from the experts at the podium were, we have no idea.
Jury's out.
we can go 60 days and here's what we think is going to happen in the next 2 months, because in the last 2 months, it's been insane. But the thing I'm seeing that I really am unnerved by is the speed at which artificial intelligence mm-hmm. can play the role of your family member convincingly. It used to be that there was a pause. If you were on a shady call, it sounded like your daughter, there would be a pause where the computer would have to think up what to say. And that doesn't happen anymore. In the last 2 months, that doesn't happen anymore. What are you seeing with AI?
It's not just the sophistication. That's a big part of it, like you just talked about. It's also the fact that it costs next to nothing. To do what you're talking about, these very sophisticated deep fakes, voice cloning, scripts for phone calls, for text messages, for emails. That used to cost considerably more, and you needed more data. Now you can clone a voice with a 3-second audio clip, and it is, to the average person, you could not tell the difference. You really can't hear the difference. Can some machines detect it? Yes. So not only is it elevating the bad actors, the scammers who want to scam you, want to get you to give up money or your identity data or whatever it is that's of value to them that they want from you, I also want you to consider that it elevates the game for them to pretend to be you. So all around, we have this very, I don't want to call it insecure, but it's so nebulous right now. We're all scrambling to figure out, how can we detect real from fake? And all of the things that we put in place to do that are slowly falling by the wayside. And it's terrifying to us at the ITRC, because we are seeing not only more people being victimized, the dollar losses and the impact of a single event are so much greater. And if you look at the FTC data, you'll see the same thing. Complaints and reports may be trending downward slightly, but the dollar losses are trending up exponentially. So it's more pervasive, it's easier for low-level fraudsters to be successful, and it's having a bigger impact on each individual victim, not to mention how high the re-victimization rates are. We can't learn from our mistakes, because there are so many pathways to vulnerability that even if you've been victimized once, you may not necessarily be able to look for that in the future, because it's going to be a completely different feel and experience. It's very hard to protect yourself. And that was very doom and gloom.
Well, and is it the fact, it's my impression that it is, that if you get scammed once that, hey, we got us a victim here. Let's go back. Let's do it again.
That has been around since I've been in the fraud game since 1986, that they will look for candidates who are likely to engage with you, likely to participate, likely to believe the lies that you're peddling across the board. So they'll know, hey, this phone number is actually a great phone number because the person answers all the time. They'll answer random numbers. They'll respond to random texts. This is an active live number. It's little things like that I think people don't realize. You actually are creating more of this communication coming into you. And I mean, I talk to people who think it's funny to troll the scammers. And I really caution against that. It's not for the faint of heart. It's not for the novice, because you can tick somebody off and make yourself a target even more than you're being targeted. You can misstep and accidentally click on something they send to you. It's really best to just ignore all of that incoming communication that you know is a scam, instead of trying to one-up them.
I get a call from my daughter. She's panicking. There's some crisis that's going on. And the advice that I hear so often is, have a family safe word that you can rely on going into it, which seems pretty clunky to me. Is there anything else that you can do? Is it ask a question that only the two of you would know?
I mean, I personally think that is just creating complications for yourself. I mean, it's not a bad idea to have a family safe word, but I'll give you the example. My mother is 82 years old. I have 3 adult children. I have told her in no uncertain terms that if any of her grandchildren ever call her asking for help, that she's to turn around and call me, because we know that that's not going to happen. It's basically the go to the source. If you didn't initiate the contact, go to the source. I know we talked to a couple who had a similar situation, and they said the voice on the end of the phone was their daughter. It sounded just like their daughter. It was the dad that answered, and it was, I need help, all of this. Well, the mom immediately went and got her cell phone and called their daughter, who picked up and said, I'm fine. So go to the source. And I understand we're emotional. We think that's our child, our grandchild, a loved one. But it is okay for you to say, give me 30 seconds and reach out to the individual in question, the individual who's allegedly on the other end of the phone.
You're with the San Diego DA. You're with the Better Business Bureau. So you've always been on, you've been one of the good guys. I'm curious.
Fighting fraud, consumer protection and education. Yes, my whole career.
I think that's terrific. I'm wondering, as you're talking about this, is there any story that stands out that you can tell us?
You know, there's a number of them, but from with, because I have worked many different types of fraud cases and encountered everything from pre-internet, where it was all live and in person, to now where everything's, you know, automated. I think the one that bothered me the most, because it had the most tentacles, was a woman who was a victim of medical identity theft, which you might think doesn't sound like it would be that big of a deal. But this thief was getting narcotics prescriptions in her name. It then triggered, not only was, now, so now she's got these issues with her medical records and her medical profile, but it triggered a law enforcement investigation, which then also triggered CPS investigation. She had children. She had also just had a baby. And now they're thinking, law enforcement is thinking that this woman who just gave birth to a baby has been abusing drugs. Her children, they went into the school and interviewed her children. Everyone is talking about this. She's, you know, comes to find, they come to her house. She's got the baby. They want to take the baby away. I mean, her whole life was turned absolutely upside down. And as a mother, it wasn't just her finances. It wasn't just her livelihood. It was her children, all because she was a victim of an identity misuse. She had done absolutely nothing wrong. She wasn't even privy to any kind of communication where she's like, oh, I used my own judgment and I engaged with that person. This all happened without her knowledge. And the consequences were, they were huge. Because even after she was able to unwind all of this, she had traumatized children. She had neighbors and a community that was still not everybody knew and thinking that this was an issue. You know, she's trying to go back out into the workforce and there's still this background is, was this this person? Does she have, is she in recovery? All of that haunted her for a long, long time.
It's been going on for a long time, this identity theft as a crime. Is it more socially understood, you know, whether that's a potential job or applying for a loan or anything? Is it more understood if you said, look, going into this, you got to know I was a victim. And so do they know that now?
It is. We are making progress there. So the ITRC was founded in 1999 when people didn't even know there was such a thing as identity theft, before there were even statutes on the books to prosecute this crime. And yes, we have made progress in the 25 years that we've been around. We still have a ways to go. There are more processes in place. For example, in the state of California, if someone has had their identity misused and they're a victim, they do get a letter if it's a criminal matter. They do get a letter from the Department of Justice that they can carry around with them that is their proof that they were a victim. So if they do get pulled over, you know, maybe for a moving violation or something like that, that they aren't hauled off and arrested because they're outstanding felony warrants. So we are starting to embed more processes in place to help victims. And we're also starting to embed more, I think, knowledge, understanding that this is a real thing and this can happen and maybe we need to investigate. But we're also not changing how we do things. I mean, consider this. If an employer is trying to fill a position, particularly a critical one, and their first candidate doesn't pass the background check, and that the candidate then says, you need to understand, I'm a victim of identity theft. That isn't me, and I will unwind this. The employer may be, potential employer, may be very understanding and say, I'm so sorry that happened to you. But how many of them are going to wait the 4, 6, 8, 10, 12 weeks for that person to unwind it? Because that and I'm being generous, but that's how long it's going to take. Most of them are going to say, sorry, we have to move on. We have a business we need to run and we need to fill this position. So they may be more understanding, but that doesn't necessarily help that victim.
So we've talked about how to avoid this problem. What do you do if you have this problem?
You know, the challenge is there are so many different types of identity misuse, so many different ways that it's not a set, here are the 5 steps or here are the 10 steps to recover your identity. It's really about what data has been misused. That is where you need to start. That's why organizations like the ITRC exist. If it was routine and it was the same process for everyone, you wouldn't need us. This would just be available, an infographic or a guidebook on the internet, and you just walk through those steps. But if you're just discovering that this is happening, I always tell people, don't be afraid to, or embarrassed or ashamed to get professional help. There are plenty of free resources out there that can help walk you through the process. Make sure you've gathered all of your documentation, anything that you have that demonstrates what is actually going on, whether that's credit reports or receipts or text messages, bank statements, whatever it is, supporting documentation and notes. And then chances are you're going to need a police report. Most of the time, in order to unwind anything other than existing credit card misuse, you're going to need a police report. So just either go and get that or gear yourself up for needing that. If you're contacting someone like the ITRC first, just know that that's probably going to be needed. And it's the critical tool that lets a lot of the consumer protection laws and those protections kick in. You have to have something to document that you actually are the victim of a crime.
ITRC, what can you do for someone in this situation?
Well, if people call us, we've got a toll-free hotline, 888-400-5530. You can go to our website, idtheftcenter.org. You can text us. You can email us. We're all over social media. You can send us a direct message. And we have actual people that will give you one-on-one direct services. So whether that's a recovery plan where you tell us what's happened and we will give you the step by step, this is what you need to do, and we'll be with you every step of the way. Now, we will not do this on your behalf. We don't get a power of attorney. We're not going to collect any of your data and start contacting all of the affected organizations on your behalf, but we will help you with language and how to phrase it and what forms do you need at these different departments and what department do you need to go to. So it's a tailored, dedicated recovery plan. And then we'll also help if you're just worried, you've been exposed to something in some way, a neighbor was a victim, or you saw a news story, or you got that weird random text message and you're not sure what to do with it, you can reach out to us. And again, it's all at no cost. We're a 501c3 charity organization, so all of our services are completely free to individuals.
Somebody who's going through this feels violated, gets depressed, feels overwhelmed. What do you say to them?
Please don't think that the only way out of this situation is by ending your own life. You are not alone. And the feelings are not as unique as you might think. In fact, in our latest surveys, we've had 12, even 16% of victims tell us that they have contemplated self-harm. And we just want everyone to know there is a path out. There is free help available to you. And we have talked to people who have made it through to the other side. It's possible. We're here for you. Even if you feel like you did something to contribute to this, we don't care if you clicked on that link. We don't care if you talked to that person on the dating site and you actually thought that they were your boyfriend or your girlfriend or you were in a relationship. We don't care about that. We're all human. And what human being has ever been told a lie and believed that lie? All of us. So there is light at the end of the tunnel. There are people who care, and there are people who care and can lead you to that light. So please don't think you have to do it alone.
God, Eva, you're gold. That's just cool. Okay, there you go. That's what I
It's
need.
it's funny when you actually believe in what you've been doing for 40 years, it
Yeah.
makes a difference.
Well, and my gosh, the people you would work with are so grateful because they're, whether they're 30, which I suspect there's a lot of those, or whether they're 80, and there's a lot of those too, and all of us in between.
Oh my gosh, that is the biggest, to me, that is the biggest lie out there, is that there is this one age group, this one demographic that is infinitely more vulnerable than all the others. And it just isn't true. Everyone is vulnerable just differently. It really just depends on how you engage in the outside world, particularly the digital world. But it's just not about age anymore. That demographic is truly meaningless to measure, how vulnerable am I just based on my age? No. There's other factors that go into that much more. And that's why I don't want people to feel embarrassed, young people to feel like I should have known better because I'm not a senior citizen. I know how to use technology, or senior citizens that are going, oh, does this mean I can't manage my own life and make my own decisions? No, it's really complicated out there.
Yeah, and statistically at work, a senior manager is more apt to click on a phishing email than a lower level person in the organization. What are you going
Oh, sometimes confidence can,
to
that hubris can
do?
be a little dangerous. Be skeptical. Embrace your inner skeptic and just go, I'm gonna step back and think about that for a minute. That a lot of the research shows that the moment that people realize either that they have been scammed or that they were almost scammed is when they disengage and step back from the interaction, because they're getting out of their emotional brain and getting into their logical brain. So we also encourage people to just disengage and take five. You don't have to react immediately. And I don't care if they're screaming on the other end of the phone, your bank isn't going to scream at you. You're their customer. And anyone else, you just don't have to engage with that. And when you step back, you're able to look at it really logically and go, that just doesn't seem right. But when you're in the moment, that's really hard. And the bad guys know that. Because why should they bother to try to hack our systems and have all this technical knowledge to try to get in some backdoor in your computer when they can just hack your brain?
ITRC, last question. One more time. How do we engage ITRC?
You can call us at 888-400-5530. You can live chat with us on our website at idtheftcenter.org, and we welcome it, please. Whatever way you're comfortable. If you want to talk to someone, live chat with someone, you can email us. We're here to help.
Thanks for listening. Our mission is simple: to help make your digital life safer at home and at work. Stay vigilant, stay informed, and join us next time for more insights that keep you safe online.